looks like, from the attorney perspective, is going to happen when you go to the administrative hearing tomorrow?
I think we're going to just show that it wasn't Gordon that robbed the woman, and that so Gordon was innocent, and they shouldn't.
And what's going to be your best evidence of that?
That Gordon has an alibi, that he's watching football, and that he hasn't gotten in any trouble, but he has a friend that it could have been mistaken for in the complex. That Gordon knows where he's playing before Ford causing trouble.
Okay. Let's go over to the Fetterman firm.
No, it's me.
What?
It's me. What did you ask?
The report.
That's me.
Yeah. So, very good. That's what I meant.
Oh.
So, hang on. Let's compare it out. So, what's going to happen tomorrow if we can't find it?
They're going to win. there's no settlement.
Okay. And what's going to be the evidence that you plan is presented to the case tomorrow?
Well, it's the alibi, and then they're going to slam the two witnesses and tell them that they're awful people.
Drag them to the mud.
Okay.
That's the thing I was looking for.
The hell for Aaron, what's going to happen tomorrow?
Well, before they go tomorrow, they're going to talk to Gordon, and they're also going to try to find another witness. And if they can't find another witness, it looks very likely that Simon will fire them.
Why would that happen?
I didn't say it.
They went rogue on you.
Am I allowed to admit why? Okay, I don't want to spoil things for other groups.
Tell everybody now. You can tell everybody now what happened in your session.
Okay. Well, Mr. Simon admitted that he was going to commit perjury at trial because the alibi is not true. Gordon.
I see some startled.
I don't want to tell you.
I think it's
there.
So what did Simon actually tell you?
Well, Gordon actually wasn't at home that night. And it came out because the attorneys did some research and found out that the Jets weren't playing that night, the Giants were. So then Simon realized there was a hole in his story and admitted that he would stick with that alibi, although it was false.
So why is Simon going to fire your law firm?
Because our attorneys warned him that they would not go along with it.
Okay. Single white female plus?
Yeah, we're going to actually lie. We know that where he said it would be, but they really don't.
Let's back up a little bit. So you found out the alibi was false?
Yes.
How did you find that out?
Because the Jets were playing on Saturday night and not on Sunday. And so.
And did you confront your client with that?
Yes, they said that, they knew that that wasn't the case and asked where he was. And we didn't know. She didn't. Miss Simon had no idea where her son was that night. But he definitely did not rob that woman. I don't know.
Our reasoning was that both teams are from New York, and Simon is not a big football fan. Or Gordon's not a big football fan, is what we determined.
So,
like, before the, like, widespread dissemination of information, such as non-sacks in the game.
Okay, the fact that Simon was mistaken about details of the football game does not necessarily mean the alibi is false.
And the investigator even made a mistake about the football game when they were putting it, because she got the score wrong.
Very close reading. Yes, go ahead.
We actually asked Simon how he knew who was playing, and he said he really did. His son just told him, so that's how. But then again, he...
So why did you press hard then?
Why did we?
Yeah.
Well, we knew that the other attorneys at the hearing are going to press hard.
Well, you didn't buy that explanation for the inconsistency, you attorneys?
Simon cracked pretty quickly.
Yeah. So we didn't have to.
We didn't really think he stood much of a chance tomorrow. He perjured himself. He gave up when we were talking to him.
You cracked his last.
There was 1 minute left. I cracked.
Okay. What caused you to get the alibi response?
Well, Aubrey kept asking me about the game, and I couldn't tell her. Sorry. The attorney kept asking me about the game, and I couldn't tell her without. And then I almost started making up facts on my own, so then I thought it was time to probably just tell the truth.
I'm confused. Our client said he was in another room studying while the game was going on. So he's like, yeah, my son watched the game. I don't know much about it. So he really couldn't understand.
There are so many issues of ethics and professionalism in this exercise. One of the subtle ones, which we are picking up now, is you all, I think, how many attorneys going into tonight's meeting were concerned about the possibility of the alibi might be false? Put your hand up. Like everybody? Almost everybody? Okay. So you might be concerned about that, and you should be. Okay? One of the things I say from my own experience is with every client, my practice is to be willing to believe the client is telling the truth about everything, even if it's highly improbable, even if I really doubt it. Be open-minded and make it true. And at the same time, be willing to believe the client is lying about things, even if they seem to be true. And that's a duty to your client, because the opposing party, the jury, the judge, whoever else is involved, is going to look at your client's story with skepticism, and you need to anticipate their skepticism, okay? And so it is not being disloyal to your client if you explore with the client before the hearing the kinds of questions the client is asking, right? But there's a real tough question about the use of the game. So let's dial back to this group over here. How did you guys talk to your client? Did you bring up the fact that the Jets, that there's a problem with the Jets story?
Yeah, we were like there's an inconsistency between two stories. It's like he got the quarterback thing right.
Yeah.
We were like, were you watching the game? Our client said he wasn't watching the game. He was in another room studying, so he didn't know anything about it.
Well, he said he was going in and out. So yeah, that was one of the first questions we asked. And you kind of went back to, were you in the room? What were you doing? Times, 3 or 4 times.
Before you brought up the fact that there was an inconsistency?
No, we brought the inconsistency up first, and we kept kind of circling.
You did. And how did you bring, well, let me ask the client, how do you recall them bringing it up?
They asked if I was in the room.
Before they told you there was an inconsistency?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I was in the room, they asked a few times.
And of course, you knew the alibi was false, obviously.
Right, and I just kept on about it. I was going in and out, I was studying, and I was like, I don't really like NFL. Then they brought up the inconsistency, and I was like, well, you know, maybe you just got the names wrong, and I don't know who wasn't, so I couldn't.
See, part of what you have to think about, and I'll invite the next person to reflect on this, is you have a newspaper article, you know there's an inconsistency. I think you ignore the inconsistency at your peril. You certainly don't want Simon to get up in front of the administrative hearing tomorrow, tell the story, and have the attorney for the housing authority handle the newspaper article. You're not being a very effective lawyer if you don't anticipate that that could happen. Probably won't. Probably the housing authority, but the housing authority attorney could be a football fan. Believe it or not, I taught this a couple of years ago, and there was someone from New York City who remembered the game from whatever this was, remembered the game, and said, Simon got it wrong. No joke. So that's a possibility. But then the question is, do you try to trap your client? Okay? So do you try to get the you know, to get the client to say, oh, I was in the group, I was watching closely, I'm a football fan, I know this, so that they can't come up with a plausible evasion. Can you do that? That's one range. The other end of it is, do you, in effect, enable your client to perjure more effectively by letting them know about the inconsistency, sort of suggesting, well, you know, you weren't completely wrong, this detail was right, this, maybe you just got too, but do you do that? And if so, is that an ethical thing to do? Okay, let's jump back to the pandas. Who's the reporter for the pandas?
Right here.
So what's going to happen tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow there's going to be another meeting before the hearing with the Simon, because right before we ran out of time, we made the attorneys aware that the story was made up.
And what triggered that? What kept that to happen?
Well, first off, to start the interview process, they started off to verifying like everything that he had said in the prior meeting, and then after that, they started providing evidence of people who identified Gordon and also brought up the football game. And at that point, Simon noted that he was probably just mistaken about the teams just because he watched more basketball. And then he immediately after that, he was like, he needs to avoid probation. I was laughing at this point, because they still weren't aware.
Right.
And so they sent him for a break.
That's why it's fun for the other client to be the reporter. Works out that way.
So it may have been the cookies, I don't know. We sent him away for a break and then he came back. And then they made that connection with him because they went back to the football game and asked him a couple of times about the discrepancy between the dates. This is what happened. And you guys can open it because I didn't say that, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Willie, what in role, why do you think you told them the alibi was false at the tail end?
I kind of felt like they knew I was lying, just based on the questions they were asking. Like, for instance, Mr. Adams, he showed you the article, and he explained that it was the wrong teams, and then he said, well, I understand what you're trying to protect yourself, and I appreciate your situation, you know, with your home. But we need to know all of the facts. And at first, I wasn't going to tell based on the information I got earlier, which was like an old woman who barely sees the cheese thing. But then when I asked him, I kept asking him, what do you think about our chances? Because if we had a strong chance of winning, then I wasn't going to reveal the truth. But then they were saying that we might have to sell because they couldn't predict what would happen, so I just went ahead and told them. So at least they'll be prepared to have all the facts, or they would try to sell.
Sounds like you felt like it was actually in your interest for them to know.
Funny thing is, when he left, this nice kind of felt like they had a strong chance of winning based on his story.
So what would happen tomorrow if you hadn't had to follow up with the client?
No. I've been pushing for my team to get all the way off. I'm going to say all these other things. I'm just going to ignore the whole discrepancy thing.
Okay, let's swing over to Romeo. Yes, and I think Alton, you were the observer.
So Arma Simon told us that she didn't recall whether her son was at home that night or not. She
no. After like 1 minute was left, same thing that happened. I could kind of tell that the dream was up, so I
got in the but you stuck with the alibi for a long time, didn't you?
Yeah, it was like the last couple of seconds.
I thought you said,
I said, well, you know, he wasn't at our house, but, you know, I'm not really
she
sure
was
where
like,
he was.
I'm not really sure. He might have been watching the game because he told me about it after, so I assumed that he was watching it, but, like, she couldn't say that he was home that night. For sure. So, but she still wants to present the evidence in court tomorrow. We've told her that we can't present evidence that we know is false, but she still wants to tell, to say in the hearing that her son was at home that night. her against doing that, but we've told her that, you know, we can't present that evidence because it's fraud. You know, all we can do our best with the evidence that we do have, that we do know is true, but, you know, we can't tackle her, like, we can't keep her from, you know, from committing perjury, but we strongly advise against it because it can make things worse for her.
And we also told her that if she committed perjury and then it was found out, she would be in even bigger trouble and they would most certainly get evicted from the housing. If she went on the stand and she told something that's not correct, she told herself that if that ever came out, that she perjured herself, that there, she would most likely be evicted of this.
If go forward, you're her lawyer tomorrow, she gets on the stand and says, I know the news, she's with me watching that kind of football game, what are you going to do? You're not going to say anything?
It seems like based on the reading that we are supposed to just let them, all we can do is advise.
So.
Yeah, I mean, we just kind of...
You know it's false, don't you?
Yes.
But I feel like we got the information by assuring her.
Right, we can't tell.
Did they give you information by assuring her?
Yeah, specifically asked her, like, if I get into that, and then you're like, well, we can't say anything regarding this certain case, so I feel like in a client's mind, they're going to think, like, oh, it's okay to tell them this then. So how as a lawyer can you turn around and say, like, oh.
So what do you think? What should, I don't know how close, it sounds like Willie, you could have another meeting with Willie, so you don't quite know what he's going to say. It sounds like, Ryan, you're going to get up there and say, so, Clarence, what are you guys going to do tomorrow? If you're not fired already.
We told our client what we would do if he perjured himself, which is why he said he might fire us.
And what did you tell him you would do?
We told him if, in fact, you know, he went along with it, notwithstanding the consequences, then we would tell the administrator that it is in fact false.
Did you feel any of the conflict that Katie Brazil expressed that you maybe made some assurances to Mr. Simon, or did you not make any assurances to Mr. Simon about confidentiality?
No.
You didn't?
No, not about him actually allow him to perjure himself. Not those types of insurance.
Yeah, and so, Ryan, did you feel like they made any insurances? Did you feel protected in any way?
Maybe a little bit.
So, over here, what are you going to say here tomorrow? I think so, right?
I guess.
All right, what's
your
answer?
Maybe she's going to say that we definitely discussed the discrepancy. And
no, what's she going to say on the witness stand tomorrow?
I guess just that I'm going to stick to my story.
Yeah, that's as far as we got.
Okay. And what are you going to do if she does? Caitlin, what are you going to do if she does?
I have no idea. I'm not sure if I would speak with my co-counselor, Mr.
Well, guess what?
What?
You get to write your 40% of the grade for the course about this restaurant.
Oh.
Okay, what the court's website will look like in just a minute. So this link called exercise will be an active link in about 15 minutes. And if you click on it, whoa, that's not supposed to happen. This will come up, right? Hopefully it's not going to be good for you. If you click on these two links, you'll get the confidential instructions. So if you were the lawyer, you'll see the client instructions. If you're the client, you'll see the lawyer instructions. You will then get recordings of students a number of years ago doing exactly the same, or almost exactly the same exercise. The one difference that you'll see in the instructions writing assignment is that when this was recorded, the students were instructed to use the ABA model rule 1.6 and 3.3, not the Georgia rules. The ABA and Georgia versions of 3.3 are the same. And I'm only asking you in the assignment to analyze the accuracy of their description of 3.3, which of course is the exception of importance here. How they talked about 1.6, because it'll just be distracting to you. There are transcripts of both. You will see that in one of the interviews, the student attorney makes very broad promises of confidentiality, as it sounds like that, really that. And the client finally says, okay, wasn't going to be there that night. And then ends up feeling like Ryan. Okay, so that's one scenario to analyze. That's this one. In this one, the client never admits the LOIs once. Okay? You're going to, let me pull up the instructions. First of all, you have the benefit of your own firm meeting, knowing what both both sides know. You can compare what you learned from everybody else in the classroom. You can look at how two students, both students were very well prepared, very professional, very different outcomes. You have all that information, and you then say, okay, now that I've thought about it, this is how I would conduct the meeting. There is no single right answer. I get papers, I've had papers that have been A-plus that were diametrically opposed in terms of how the person said they would handle the situation. What I'm looking for, in terms of the one-to-one model, is I'm looking for your ability to understand 3.3, to apply it to the nuances of these facts, right? And then to realize, because, well, now, next week, if we look at the syllabus, the readings are fairly light for next week, we will have plenty of time next week to work through what does a reasonable remedial measure mean in the context of 3.3, about differences, and so on. And then the class, the Wednesday before your papers due is the guest speaker class. And I deliberately scheduled it that way, so you don't have any assignments at all due for the week and a half before the paper. This is the first time I actually haven't been able to get into the Garrow case. We will next week. This still works out well because what I have discovered is that if we just read about Arnold and the horrendous decisions he had to make to honor confidentiality, that students tend to be thinking it's kind of a freak show. And they come out of reading the Garrow case and say, well, I never am going to represent serious murderers. I don't want to do criminal defense. Religiously stolen. But when you do the Simon exercise today and realize how hard it is to maintain the trust of your client, some of you did, some of you didn't, and how lots of dynamics influence that, including the assurance of confidentiality, then I think you can better appreciate the extraordinary weight that our profession gives to guaranteeing confidentiality, even in circumstances like we saw in the Armin case. But I think you actually have to role play it today and to see how integral confidentiality is, and how tricky it is to talk about the exceptions in terms of being able to get your clients right. So, questions about any of this? Let me just say, as I wrote that class, that I think Hay had the same impression, I think somebody from another class or an undergraduate would have thought you were clinic students talking to a client. I mean, I thought all the clients did a really, really nice job of being realistic as far as I could see, and I congratulate them for that. And I think you guys did a great job of staying your role, every one of you. And there's no sense that somebody did a better job than somebody else did in terms of what you learned. Rather, it's that there are so many complicated ways in which the 45 relationship comes up.